Jai Anantakoti Vaishnava Rindu Ki Jai Namacharya Shivaharidas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Sri Gaur Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Dvaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shai Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasaya Uttale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Jinamane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharani Nivasesa Sundavadi Paskachadi Satarani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutala Padakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sarvajatam Sahagana Ravanatam Vitam Sam Sajiva Sadvaitam Sadvaditam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Vanchkalpa Trivishcha Keep us in the Vyavata Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavam Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So let's see. 18th of April 2022 in Hillsborough, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 33, Text 36. Anugrahaya Bhaktanam Manusham Deha Ashkita Vajate Tadrashi Krida Yashudva Tatparo Bhavet. Anugrahaya. To show mercy. Bhaktanam. To his devotees. Manusham. Human-like. Deham. Abhai. Ashkita. Assuming. Bhajate. He accepts. Tadrishi, such, Kridaha, pastimes, Yaha, about which, Shrutva, hearing, Tatparaha, dedicated to him, Bhavet, one becomes. BBC translation. When the Lord assumes a human-like body, to show mercy to his devotees. He engages in such pastimes as will attract those who hear about them to become dedicated to him. Purport. Shivajiva Goswami explains in this connection that when Lord Krishna descends to this world in his original two-handed form, out of kindness, he manifests that form in a way his devotees conditioned in human society can perceive and understand. Thus here it is stated, Manusham Deham Ashtitaha. He assumes a human-like body. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur glorifies the Lord's conjugal pastimes, saying that these romantic affairs have an inconceivable spiritual potency to attract the polluted heart of conditioned souls. It is an undeniable fact that any pure or simple-hearted person who hears narrations of the loving affairs of Krishna will be attracted to the lotus feet of the Lord and gradually become his devotee. So much from Krishna book. Some ask, and Prabhupada's referring here to the question in text 28, some ask that if Krishna is self-sufficient, why did he all manifest the pastimes with the gopis which are disturbing to the so-called morals of the world. The answer is that such activities show special mercy to the fallen conditioned souls. The gopis are expansions of his internal energy, but because Krishna wanted to exhibit the Rasa Lila, they appear as ordinary human beings. In the material world, pleasure is ultimately manifest in the sex attraction between man and woman. The man lives simply to be attracted by women, and the woman lives simply to be attracted by men. That is the basic principle of material life. As soon as these attractions are combined, people become more and more implicated in material existence. In order to show them special favor, Krishna exhibited this Rasa Lila dance. It is just to captivate the conditioned souls. Since they are very much attracted by sex, they can enjoy the same life with Krishna and thus become liberated from the material condition. I'm just going to be Krishna Chakravarti Thakur's Tika. This verse answers Rikki Maharaj's second question, verse 28. Kim Anipaya Praya? What was Krishna's purpose in doing such forbidden activities? Sukadeva Goswami said, Krishna acted in this way to show mercy, anugrahaya, to his devotees. By hearing about Krishna's love dalliance with the gopis, the living entities situated in human bodies, manushandeha ashtitaha, so he's glossing this phrase quite differently. So instead of saying that Krishna is taking a human body, he's saying the living entities who take human bodies will become believers in these topics. Thus it should be understood that Krishna's sweet rasa dance, the quintessence of all his pastimes, is like a powerful medicine consisting of mantras and jewels. So, today when we go to the doctor, right? Nowadays if we go to the doctor, they don't give us medicines from mantras and jewels, do they? Krishna's rasa lila has an inconceivable spiritual potency to attract the polluted hearts of conditioned souls. The chief qualification to attain this level of devotion involving Madhurya Rasa is to have a human body. Manushandeha Ashitaha. So, if you have a human body, that's your qualification. Pretty good. It is an undeniable fact that any pure-hearted person who hears about Krishna's conjugal affairs with the damsels of Raja will become attracted to the sweet lotus feet of the Lord and gradually become a loving servant of Krishna. Anugrahaya bhaktana manushandeha ashitaha bhajateta trishikrida yachitva tatparo bhayat. When the Lord assumes a human-like body to show mercy to his devotees, he engages in such pastimes as will attract those who hear about them to become dedicated. So it's very nicely explained by Śrīla Rūpa Goswāmī in the beginning of his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that there's three kinds of happiness. So anybody know the three kinds of happiness? So there's material happiness. Material happiness, that's pretty simple. I eat a pizza, I see a sunrise, I can buy a new fancy car, material happiness. Actually, Bhaktivinoda divides it into two. Bhaktivinoda says that there's physical happiness and then there's emotional happiness. And he talks about that emotional happiness is on the level of the demigods and physical happiness is on the level of the animals. So material happiness is happiness for the body and the mind. Right? For the mind, I feel satisfied that I've created something, I finished something, I can check off a project on my to-do list, or I have loving relationships with family and friends, I have a nice romantic relationship, people are praising me. I mean, these are all happiness for the mind. And then there's physical happiness for the body. Of course, sexual happiness combines, ideally, combines both of those. And then the other level of happiness is impersonal happiness, merging into the Brahman, being liberated. It's kind of an irony that impersonal happiness is an absence of physical and emotional happiness, isn't it? There's no more physical sensations, and there's no more mental, emotional sensations, and that is another kind of happiness. Isn't that ironic? What most people think of as happiness, a higher level, is to not have any of that. And then the highest level of happiness is in the relationship between Krishna and his expansions and Krishna and his devotees. So these are the three kinds of happiness. And I've always, of all of Srila Prabhupada's writings and all of Srila Prabhupada's lectures, one of my top favorites is the preface to the Nectar of Devotion. I don't know how many times I've read it, but I could read it unlimited times. And Srila Prabhupada there describes how everything is motivated by rasa. Everything everybody does is always motivated by rasa. And knowing that is the key to getting rid of our material attachments and to entering into spiritual life. So rasa means a taste. Rasa also has a meaning in Ayurveda as the end product of digestion. So we all know how wonderful it is to digest our food well, yes? When we digest our food well, we feel energized. And the result of digestion is ojas and tejas. Ojas is a brightness, right? When you see a healthy person, they look bright, yeah? You say, oh, you look good. We don't just mean you have a nice, a good hairstylist or a good, you know, you have good fashion sense. Because if you're very sickly, even with a beautiful hairstyle and beautiful clothes, you won't look very good, isn't it? Right? And even if you're not dressed or coiffed very beautifully, if you're healthy, you have a glow. This is the ojas. And tejas is physical strength. So one gets mental and physical strength from good digestion, and this good digestion is rasa. A rasayana is a food that's very easily digested. Just like a rasayana is fruit that's grown locally, so it's in season, it's ripened on the tree, it's grown organically. If you eat that, you digest it fully. There's practically no waste produced from that, and it produces ojas and tejas. It's a rasayana. So that's the meaning physically, but rasayana, rasa is also explained by Bharata Muni as emotional experience of happiness. So he explains this in the five primary ones: peacefulness, wanting to serve, having a feeling of friendship, having a feeling of care or parental and then romantic attraction, and then seven ways of joy, happiness, comedy, wonder, which all rasas have some element of wonder or astonishment in them, fear, anger, horror, compassion or lamentation, or chivalry. And chivalry is an interesting one. Chivalry has four subcategories. So one is the happiness of sportsmanlike fighting, the happiness we get if we play a good game of chess with a friend, or a good game of tennis with a friend. And then there's dhanavir, the happiness we get from being charitable. And dayavir is the happiness we get from being merciful, and dharmavir is the happiness we get from being righteous. So these are all the different ways in which we try to taste rasa. So we're going to look at these three kinds of happiness in terms of rasa: our material happiness of the body and mind, liberation, and Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's rasa. So material happiness we're quite familiar with. These 12 kinds of enjoyment in this world. And I always think of them as like a misery sandwich. That in order to enjoy rasa in this world, one first has to have some austerity. Like, let's say I want to have pizza So I have to either grow everything. I have to grow the wheat. I have to grow the tomatoes. I have to take care of the cow to get the cheese. I have to have an olive tree. You know, I've been to Italy many times, and people there have their own olive trees, and they make their own olive oil. Practically all the families make their own olive oil. And they grow their own tomatoes, and then there's wheat farms. One of the reasons Italian food is so tasty is that it's made with local, organic-grown ingredients in Italy. And it's all heirloom. The tomatoes are all heirloom. They're not modern hybrids and so forth. But that's a lot of work. My granddaughter here is growing her own vegetables, and it's a lot of work, right, to do that. Or if you're not going to grow your own food, you have to work at a job. You have to go to work, and you have to earn the money. And then you have to drive to the store, and you have to buy the things at the store. And then not only do you have to grow them or earn them, then you have to prepare them, right? You have to wash them and cut them, and etc. So there's some difficulty. And then after eating, if you eat too much, then you're fat, and then you have to carry around this big body. You know, sometimes I see people who are really, like, grossly morbidly obese, and I think how much suffering that is to be carrying around all this weight all the time. And I think that was a cupcake, and that was a pizza, and that was an ice cream, and, you know. Or if you eat too much, you get digestion problems, your stomach hurts, and you feel lethargic. And if you eat too much of the wrong foods, then you can get all kinds of diseases. You can get diabetes and heart disease, and these are the cancer, you know, and these diseases are devastating the population. And of course, you also have to clean up. You have to wash your dishes and clean your kitchen. So it's a misery sandwich. And this is true if you think of any kind of happiness. I mean, when I was 16, I went on a youth tour on bicycle of the Rocky Mountains in Canada, Jasper Banff National Park. And one time, everyone decided that they wanted to climb one of the Rocky Mountains, which was really stupid because none of us had any mountain climbing gear or experience. So I, you know, the leader of the troop, the leaders were just in their early 20s, so they weren't exactly very mature or intelligent people, although it was an official thing. Anyway, so we're climbing this mountain, and we all almost die climbing the mountain, and then you get to the top, and there's this gorgeous view. And then, of course, you have to get down the mountain. And I decided after that was my first and last time ever climbing the mountain. You know, you go through all this austerity just to get this view and this sense of accomplishment. It's a misery sandwich. And you think of anything. You work hard to buy a beautiful house. And so you have to work hard to buy the house. You have to work hard to make the payments on the house. Yes, you get to enjoy your house. But you also have to keep making the payments, and you have to repair the house. Right? You have to keep it in working order. Plumbing breaks and the roof leaks and then you're always in anxiety. If you go on a trip, you're worrying about the house. And everything's like this. You know, in romantic enjoyment, so you have to find a person to date. It's really awful. You know, you have to go on so many dates and find so many persons, and then you have to try to impress them in so many ways, and you know that they're trying to impress you, and so you know that they're not really being themselves because they're trying to impress you. And you know they're putting on a front, and you're putting on a front. And so much anxiety, and this one doesn't work, and that one doesn't work, and then finally you find the person, and it's wonderful, it's intoxicating, and you're in love, and then you argue about things. And you don't agree about things. And they do this thing wrong, and that thing wrong, and this doesn't work out, and that doesn't work out. And you have children who have this problem and that problem. And, you know, so many cases end in separation and divorce and hatred and even murder. So this is our material rasa. And let's say that somehow you could get it just right. Let's say somehow you could just get the rasa without any suffering, which is our idea, that somehow or other, I'm going to get the rasa without suffering. You know, I won't have to work, I'll just win the lottery or something. And then I'll hire servants to maintain everything. Of course, you've got to manage the servants. But we have this idea. But even if we do that, it's temporary. So even if you get the perfect rasa, you have a perfect romantic partner in a perfect house, and you have perfect digestion, and you have perfect health, and everything is wonderful, it ends. And often when everything is perfect, it's worse when it ends. Right? The people who suffer most in a divorce are the people who thought they had a perfect marriage. Happened to a friend of mine. He thought, you know, I have a perfect marriage. And after 10 years, you know, his wife just exploded at him and left. And he couldn't. Wow. And ultimately, we all have to leave when we die. All right, so the next level is, well, let me just get rid of all this. Let me just stop any desire for anything physical or mental in this world. And we have definitely a whole group of people in this world, they're in the minority, but who do this? They become renunciates, they live in a cave somewhere. Maybe they even take vows of silence. Minimal human interaction. They eat super austere food, wear super austere clothes, same type of clothes every day. Don't interact or talk with other people, don't have any kind of family relationships. And they detach themselves from all thoughts and all feelings and all desires. And they want to either disappear or merge into the Brahman. Of course, this is the impetus behind suicide or suicidal behaviors. People who get, you know, really addicted to various kinds of intoxicants or any kind of escapism, where let me just escape from everything. You know, a devotee sent me a poem he wrote the other day. You know, I just want to leave my body now. I was like, ooh. But this is the tendency also, that this material pleasure is mixed with pain. In fact, it can't even exist without pain. And therefore, let me have nothing. Let me become nothing. Now, there is a kind of happiness in Brahman realization, because the soul and the Lord, even in the form of Brahman, Brahmeti Padmaniti Padmaniti Satyate, is happiness. So even though we can say the Ananda portion is not realized in Brahman, still their happiness of Brahman is billions of times greater than the happiness of the body and the mind. And people who attain Brahman are like, wow, this is amazing joy. But we say, Avasuddha Buddhaya, those who attain Brahman, they're still not purified in their intelligence. Because what we really want is variety of rasa. That's what we really want. That's what we're hankering for. Which is why impersonal realization is so difficult. It's very difficult. Klesha. Because it's very artificial. I mean, it's available. Krishna has this form of Brahman, and that's available to the jiva who wants it. But it's not natural. And so therefore, the souls of the Brahman tend not to stay there forever. In fact, they tend to come back to material life. So all these things that we're trying to enjoy in the world, The reason that they're miserable, and this is a very important thing to understand, is not that intrinsically they're miserable, but that our desire to enjoy them is based on trying to be God rather than to serve God. Those who are pure devotees do not find the world to be a miserable place. In fact, they don't even perceive the existence of a material world at all. To them, everything is the spiritual world. So it's not a question of, you know, dying and changing our geographical position. It's a question of changing our consciousness. So Krishna's coming to attract us to that. Krishna appears on this earth for many reasons. But one of them is to attract us. Yes, you want to enjoy these 12 kinds of tastes. Here, enjoy them properly with me. I mean, it's just like the parent takes some, you know, dirty toy out of the child's mouth and gives them food. But in this world, we don't know that there's real rasa. All we can think of is this misery rasa and liberation. That's all we can conceive of. And many people can't even conceive of liberation, but that's all we can think of. Well, if I want to be happy, I guess I have to do it with my gross and subtle body, even though it's not very satisfying, it's all there is, and so, well, I just have to try to take the good with the bad. Or let me just escape. And Krishna says, no, there's something else. And I was really struck in this section of the Bhagavatam how Krishna is attracting the souls even at the risk of his being criticized. Because he wants to show the living entities the full range of his pastures. I mean, Krishna comes in other incarnations where he doesn't do that. Like as Lord Ramachandra, Krishna doesn't show this sort of apparently irreligious behavior. Lord Ramachandra is strictly the path of Dharma. But we think of any other incarnation, you know, Matsya, Korma, Varaha. They're not showing this range of rasa, isn't it? Right? And if we think about in so many of the religious traditions of the world, there's hardly any understanding of rasa at all. We don't know much of the activities of the Lord. You know, he's a pillar of smoke and a pillar of fire and a burning bush. And, you know, there's not much of an understanding. What is his own life? For people who think that Jesus is God, they see him. They don't see him in his own. They don't see God in his own life. And if Krishna comes and shows us, these are my pastimes, these are the spiritual world, he's going to be subject to criticism. Yes? Why, you know, even at Krishna's childhood pastimes where he's stealing butter and yogurt from other people's houses and urinating on the floor and making babies cry. What kind of a child is this? And what to speak of Krishna's dancing with the gopis who are apparently married to other people? And people do criticize Krishna for this. It's not that they don't, they do. One time when I was visiting my mother, she had me stay in an apartment in the same building. She didn't really have room in her, she only had one bedroom in her apartment. And it was, the person who owned it was some lawyer or something. He had two sons, and one of his sons was some sort of a professor, and he had written a book about Krishna. And so when I was there, I was looking at this book, and it was awful. You know, just criticizing Krishna as being immoral. Or even on the battlefield, Kurukshetra really tells Arjuna, hey, now that Karna is fixing the wheel on his chariot, now is the time to shoot him. Or Krishna going at Bhishma with the chariot wheel after saying he wouldn't fight in the battle. Or tricking Jayadrava that it looked like the sun had set and it hadn't actually set, and that way Arjuna could kill Jayadrava because the Kurus put down their guard. And so one may criticize Krishna. or leaving the battlefield of fighting with Jarasandha in order to attend to Rukmini's letter. But if Krishna doesn't show this, we're not going to be attracted. And we're going to think that what we have materially is everything. And here we're learning that these pastimes are very attractive. And aren't they very attractive? I mean, when I first read Krishna book when I was in college, I was like, yeah, that's what I want. I want to go to that world. I want to be part of that. You know, in our Hare Krishna movement, there's a lot we have to offer that's being offered by so many religious organizations and spiritual organizations or even good dharmic moral places. And we say, don't take intoxication. The government says, don't take intoxication. I mean, so much of what we have to offer can't be found in many other places besides our own society. But something that's not being offered in general is Krishna's ultimate pastimes. Hardly anybody knows of this. I mean, even those people brought up in the Hindu tradition are really not that familiar in the proper way with Krishna's ultimate pastimes. If they know about it, they often know about it in some peculiar way. So this is our great jewel. And as Prabhupada writes earlier in the Bhagavatam, one should be captivated by this information. Srila Prabhupada wanted us to read Krishna book every night. He wanted us to read Nectar Devotion over and over and over again. We should be absorbing ourselves in these pastimes. And when we do Paramjus Phanivartite, we automatically give up our interests in material rasa and in liberation. Automatically, we don't have to make some extraneous endeavor. Because they just pale by comparison. And then what magically happens is that material life no longer appears miserable to us at all. And we are naturally already liberated as a byproduct. How interesting. We see everything in this world as Krishna's energy, and using it in his service means that there's no more misery connected with it. There's not even a sense of misery. One is experiencing then this spiritual rasa even in one's apparently ordinary life in this world, and one always has a sense of being liberated. So the irony, like Jesus said, those who try to find their life will lose it, but those who lose their life for my sake will find it. This is the irony. That when we try to enjoy material rasa or we try to enjoy liberation, we end up dissatisfied. And when we try to enjoy being the agents of Krishna's enjoyment, when we relish Krishna's enjoyment, when we act as a servant to Krishna's enjoyment, then all these other things are already included. Like if you have $1,000, you automatically have $10. So this is the way. And this is the way for all of us, whether we've been associated with Krishna consciousness for one day or 50 years, is to absorb ourselves in Krishna's pastimes. And to aim to taste these rasas with Krishna. Akila rasamrita. Because, my dear friends, everything we do is motivated by rasa. Everything. If we are not trying to taste the rasa of serving Krishna, we will try to taste the rasas in this world. We're ananda mayavyasat. We are pleasure-seeking beings. So if for whatever reason we hold ourselves back from entering deeply into Krishna's pastimes, then we're going to be very frustrated with not being able to give up our desires for material enjoyment and liberation in this world. If we quote-unquote know the philosophy and we know that we shouldn't be attached to sense gratification and liberation, but we don't dive deeply into Krishna's pastimes, we will not be able to give these things up because we are pleasure-seeking by nature. It just doesn't work. So these books are there, as Prabhupada said. I have translated these books for you to distribute and for you to read, for us to go deeply into them and to really be meditating on them, to make it part of our reality. That we are meditating on Krishna's pastimes, and they are so sweet. All of them. So that is why Krishna comes. Even at the risk of being criticized, even at the risk of being misunderstood. Because he knows that this is what will make us truly happy. This is another irony that we say one should just work for Krishna's pleasure, not one's own pleasure, but what gives Krishna pleasure is making us happy with his pastimes. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions, corrections. Yes, Krishna.
What's the key to hearing in such a way that we become purified?
Oh, good question. What's the key to hearing in such a way that we become purified? I'm not sure if there's just one. One of them, of course, is to hear from the right source. So if I was hearing from my mother's friend's son, I wouldn't become purified. So he wrote a whole book about Krishna, but it was all basically blasphemy. So we want to hear from Krishna from those who are attracted to Krishna, from those who love Krishna, from those who are attached to Krishna. And then we'll pick up something of their love. It's like we have our guru Gayatri mantra that I meditate on my spiritual master being enthused in Krishna consciousness. So when we hear from someone who is enthused, then our ability to become enthused also increases. Another thing is to hear with the aim of being attracted and enthused, not with the aim of just accumulating knowledge. Like Uddhava Goswami says, don't study books just that you're going to make a living by preaching them, or don't study books just so that you can amass a lot of knowledge and impress people. So we shouldn't be studying these books for knowledge. And sometimes, I hate to say this, but sometimes our Shastric courses in ISKCON and our Shastric exams actually promote that kind of study. You know, that the exams will be a bunch of trivia memory questions, as if that's the purpose of study. Just so I can, you know, quote exactly this sentence from this purport on this page, or that I can tell you exactly the plot details of this particular pastime. So just, we should be studying to, of course we should want to know, but we should want to know to relish. So I think those are two of the keys. There are more, I'm sure, but to hear from the persons who are relishing, and to hear for the purpose of relishing, to hear for the purpose of being attracted, and for the purpose of pleasing the Lord. That Krishna is pleased when we hear about him. Yes, Sam?
There's different levels of hearing.
Oh, yes.
And when you go to a doctor and you have something wrong with you, you hear, he's talking to you, but when he gives you a diagnosis, gives you the remedy, you tend to pay a little bit more attention to what he's saying.
Yes.
Your hearing elevates a little bit.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, actually, there's five stages of meditation that are described by our acharyas, and the first one begins with hearing. The first one is hearing. And actually, each of those stages are deeper and deeper levels of meditative hearing. So we could give a whole class just on that. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Radha Goloka Nanda ki jai.